The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
It seemed impossible, but we actually have college football games on the docket that we get to talk about as College Football Live. Desmond Howard, Greg McElroy, Joey Galloway, I'm Jason Fitz, and we got the full slate last night from the SEC schedule, gentlemen, and it actually lets us, yeah, we'll talk some COVID, but it lets us talk about actual football games as we get ready for the fall schedule. Let's take a look at some of what we found out last night. The big games from the SEC schedule, the defending national champions will open conference play with Mississippi State coming to town with Mike Leach. LSU's won 13 of the last 14 home games against the Bulldogs. That's a tough way to start there. You've also got Georgia traveling to Tuscaloosa to play Bama on October 17th. It'll be the first time Alabama hosts Georgia since 2007. That game was Nick Saban's first loss as Alabama's head coach. And if that's not enough for you, get your Florida-Georgia line song puns ready. The cocktail party, Florida-Georgia, November 7th. Both teams will be coming off of a bye week before their meeting for the eighth straight season. So that'll always be a good one. And not to be outdone, Alabama will head to LSU on November 14th. The Crimson Tide have won each of the last four games played in Baton Rouge, including a pair of shutouts. So we'll see how that one plays. And finally, the Iron Bowl will stay put on November 28th. It'll be the first time since the series resumed in 1948 that it won't be Alabama's final conference game of the season. So we have actual games to preview, and that means we can take a look at the schedule. So Greg McElroy, I will ask you as our SEC guru, what are your thoughts as you look at this schedule release?
Well, it definitely got me feeling pretty excited, didn't it? I mean, just seeing things that are going to be scheduled, very, very entertaining stuff last night from the SEC. The game of the year, guys, for the first time in quite a while, I think it might be Georgia-Florida or Florida-Georgia, depending on what side of the rivalry you're on. If you look at the SEC East as a whole, they are clearly the top two. Now, I like Kentucky. I think South Carolina's got a chance to be pretty decent. I think Tennessee might surprise some folks. But it's very clear that the top two teams are either Georgia or Florida, and depending on who wins that game, it's going to be probably the winner is going to be representing the East in the SEC Championship. So that's the game of the year in the SEC, and that's the first time in a while, guys, that we've been saying that the game of the year is coming from the SEC East.
Well, with that being said, Joey, for the first time, we get a 10-game conference schedule for the SEC. What's it mean when you see that sort of a conference schedule being laid out in this conference particularly?
I like it. And the SEC has always been a tough conference to win because they have so many good teams and they're so deep in conference that you know there's going to be some great games. It's going to be interesting to me to see how teams like LSU perform. All of a sudden, you know, going to LSU, from what I've heard, is the toughest place or one of the toughest places to play in college football. All of a sudden, the fans won't be there. So what will that be like to go on the road to some of these SEC schools with no fans in the stands? It won't be crazy. And then I'm wondering, how flexible is this schedule? Because you know along the way, there are going to be some cancellations of games or some delays in games because of what's going on in the country. So how flexible are they and how long do they have to get these 10 games in?
That's a good point, Joey. And that's what I was thinking, because about a week ago this time, don't forget, you know, the Big Ten released their schedule. We were all excited about it. We were happy, like, yeah, we're going to have college football. And then, 36 to 48 hours later, it seemed like the bottom was about to fall out. They had an emergency meeting. The presidents had to meet. And then a couple of days after that, we realized that we weren't going to have a Big Ten season. So I'm approaching this very happily, but I'm also very cautious about that, because we got the kids on, the kids are on campus, and we seen tweets go out the other night about how some of these kids are not practicing social distancing. They're not wearing masks. Like, they can destroy this whole thing in a blink of an eye. So I'm cautiously optimistic about them releasing their schedule.
Cautiously optimistic's appropriate, Des. I think that's totally reasonable. But how about this, guys? Let's just think about this. The SEC forever has fought hard against expanding from that 8-game conference schedule. Well, now here, obviously, in what is a very unique season, we're now seeing 10 conference games from the SEC. I wonder, did the toothpaste just come out of the tube? Because I honestly think, y'all, once the fans of the SEC and the players and just fans of college football across the country, once they're seeing this many incredible games week in, week out, schedule's going to feel a little bit like the NFL. Like, every week, you better bring your A game because you could potentially lose. I wonder if this is a step in the direction, not just from the SEC, but from college football Power 5 as a whole, of seeing more conference games across the board and more Power 5 versus Power 5 games that we'll see here in the years to come.
I appreciate you guys being cautious with your optimism. I'm going to go full-on optimist, though. I'm too excited to let any of this sneak in. Now, look, they're still singing We Are the Champions down in Baton Rouge, obviously. We talked a little bit about LSU. They open with Mississippi State on September 26th. Their schedule heats up in the middle of October with a trip to Florida, followed by meetings with South Carolina and Auburn before they meet with Alabama November 14th. So, Des, I'll ask you, what are realistic expectations for LSU, our defending national champions, coming into this season?
Hey, guys, I tell you what, if we had normal circumstances in 2020, we didn't have the pandemic, it was just a regular college season going into the 2020 football year, I wouldn't be so high on the LSU Tigers. I think they lost way too much. You might even look at this as a rebuilding year. You know, they lost the kid wizard, Joe Brady, who wasn't the offensive coordinator, but he pretty much was calling the plays. They lost him. He went to Carolina to become the OC in the NFL. They lost the best quarterback they've ever seen, had the best season we've ever seen from that a person in that position, Joe Burrow, the Heisman Trophy winner. And then Dave Aranda, defensive guru, he went on to become the head coach at Baylor. They replaced him with Bo Pelini. I don't know, guys. They're missing like about 8 guys on defense. It almost looks like a team that's trying to restart, retool their season. So I wouldn't have been high on them, Joey, under regular circumstances, and now I'm still not high on the LSU Tigers.
I became a huge fan of Coach O at the end of last season, and his attitude, his approach, when we kept asking questions, you know, who do you want to play in the playoff? Are you guys number one? And his attitude always was, yep, we don't care who we play. We don't care where exactly we're ranked. We'll play anybody, anywhere. So I became a big fan. Now, if he can pull this off with everything you just talked about, Des, everything they just lost, if he can bring this team back and be anywhere close to as good as they were last season, he will be an all-time great. I don't know that any team has lost as much as LSU lost from last season to this season, from coaching staff down to players. I mean, I would be amazed if this is a good football team. But honestly, when you talk to guys that went to LSU, like Booger McFarland, I think he's still living off of last year's team. But he claims that they're going to be really good once again because they're going to reload. But I don't believe it.
I like the Booger impression, by the way. That was strong. So, Greg, I'll ask you, when you're talking about a new passing game coordinator and they're trying to figure out the quarterback position, from a quarterback standpoint, what's it going to look like for LSU?
Miles Brennan's the real deal, y'all. I'm just telling you, he might not be Joe Burrow. And don't get me wrong, those remarkably large shoes that he's stepping into. But this kid can throw it, man. I mean, he's got a good understanding of the offense. That's never been his problem. The problem is, y'all, he was like 150 pounds soaking wet with rocks in his pocket when he arrived on campus. Now he's bulked up. He's well over 200 pounds. He can handle the physicality that the season's going to present. And I feel really comfortable with him stepping into those shoes with the supporting cast that he's going to have, including Ja'Marr Chase, the nation's best wide receiver, arguably. So I'm not worried about the quarterback spot or the offense. I'm just worried about finding the edge. LSU had that edge last year. Will they be able to recreate that, knowing that they just came off a championship and defending's a lot harder than it is getting to the top of the mountain?
Hey, Greg, you know better than anybody that the relationship between the quarterback and the OC is vitally important for success for the offense and for the team. And that's what we watched a season ago with Joe Brady and Joe Burrow. I mean, those guys, it was like a match made in heaven. They were always in sync on the same page. That's my biggest concern. Now, you did hit on a good point. He does have the best wide receiver in the country in Ja'Marr Chase that he's going to throw the ball to. And Ja'Marr, just put the ball anywhere in his vicinity, he's going to come down with it. So that's going to help him. That's going to help his confidence. But the chemistry between the quarterback and the offensive coordinator and the rhythm that they're going to have to get into. Don't forget, guys, they don't have Clyde Edwards-Helaire, too, who was the second most important person on that team last year.
Hey, Greg, that was a great spin you put on that. I don't care who is next. It would be hard. I mean, you've seen what he did last year. You've seen Joe Burrow and what he did with that offense.
Yeah.
You've seen how impressive they were. I don't know who would be stepping into those shoes that you could spin and make us feel comfortable that they're going to be even half as good as they were last year. Look, a lot of guys can throw it. But what Joe Burrow did last year was at a different level. And so all I'm saying is, I don't care who this kid is. He's probably very talented. I still can't imagine LSU being anywhere close to what they were able to do last season.
In fairness, the only thing I'll
say
is...
Hang on a second. Have we not seen Oklahoma take Baker Mayfield to Kyler Murray to Jalen Hurts, who finished second in the Heisman? You're telling me quarterback is an irreplaceable piece now? Okay, Joey, I'm not saying he's going to win the Heisman. I'm just saying don't count my guy Miles Brennan out. He's going to surprise some people.
Did you just put LSU in the same quarterback conversation with Oklahoma? Oklahoma should be.
It's got to start somewhere.
Right now,
it's got to start somewhere.
And here I was thinking we were going to get to the first segment without you two arguing, but that obviously isn't going to happen. I will remind everybody: a year ago, right now, we weren't talking about Joe Burrow the way we were by the end of the season. So you never know. An important note, by the way, with all of the schedule announcements, the SEC is going to mandate that any employees or fans that are in and around the stadium will wear masks. So I do want everybody to know that safety is still at the forefront, as they will require face coverings for all fans and workers at any game. So that's an important note. We'll obviously keep breaking down all things SEC, but just when you thought it couldn't be any stranger for the Big Ten, might have outdone themselves. We'll tell you about it. Plus, spring and, obviously when we start getting spring football, that means we got Nick Saban. Don't worry, he always speaks his mind. He has reminded us of that today when he talked about spring football. You'll hear what he had to say. He did not mince words. That's next. Star players and their families continue to demand answers from the Big Ten regarding the decision to not play football this fall. But they're not the only ones in the dark. Here's Penn State Athletic Director Sandy Barber revealing what, to be frank, she doesn't know.
It is unclear to me whether or not there was a vote. Nobody's ever told me there was. So I just don't know whether there actually was a vote by the chancellors and presidents.
Now, with that being said, Penn State President Eric Barron didn't necessarily clarify if there was a vote, but he did release a statement saying that he supports the Big Ten Conference's decision, which was based on an accumulation of testing and tracing results that vary across member universities, growing concerns being expressed from medical experts, and newly emerging evidence of potential health risks for student athletes due to post-COVID-19 complications. Nothing is more important to Penn State than the health and well-being of students. So that leaves the question of what's next. We're joined now by ESPN senior college football writer Adam Rittenberg joining the show. Adam, what are parents hoping to accomplish in this process of trying to find out the information through Freedom of Information Act of what the schools decided?
Yeah, there's a lot of movements, Jason. I spoke with Randy Wade, the father of Ohio State star defensive back Sean Wade, earlier today, and he's flying from his home in Florida to Chicago, where I am right now, to go visit the Big Ten headquarters and try to get some answers and some details. And he told me that this decision was made really early. There was all sorts of developments that are happening in terms of fighting COVID-19, and he and other parents want some answers. They want details as to why the Big Ten decided to postpone when it did. He said this is not an Ohio State movement. I invite all parents from around the Big Ten to show up with me at league headquarters and ideally have an audience with new league or first year league commissioner Kevin Warren. Spoke to a parent from Iowa who was also planning to be there. So this is not going away, as the Big Ten hasn't said a whole lot about the details that went into its decision.
In fairness, Adam, as parents demand details, what can they actually do with what information they really get?
Well, I think they just want to know more specifics. What were the forecasts? Kevin Warren relied heavily on two groups, the Infectious Diseases Task Force and the Sports Medicine Group, and had extensive meetings, sources told me, leading into the weekend, where they essentially reached a decision among the Big Ten presidents. And so what was said in those meetings that prompted a league that released its schedule on August 6th to announcing on 6 days later that it was postponing the fall season? What new information or what total information led Kevin Warren to really push this direction with the league presidents and chancellors?
As always, we appreciate your insight. Thank you so much for joining us. You're doing a great job covering the chaos, Adam. Thank you so much.
So, gentlemen, I'll ask you, specifics was the word that was just used by Adam. So, Des, when you're a parent looking for specifics, are you looking for those from the conference or from the school? Who should be transparent here?
Normally, under regular circumstances, you would look for answers from the school. Now, I guess what's kind of disheartening is no one has any answers and everyone seems to be pointing fingers. So that makes it very hard to distinguish as a fan, as a player, or as a parent, what's fact and what's fiction. We just saw Penn State's athletic director, Sandy, come out publicly and said that she's not even sure if they had a vote. No one told her if they had a vote. Now, you know, maybe that's above her pay grade, so she wasn't invited. I get that. But you still have to have some line of communication with your president. Your president, your chancellor, whoever is your boss, you're supposed to have a direct line of communication with that person so you can understand exactly what the circumstances are so you can dictate this to those who need to know. So for Sandy to say that she had no idea whether there was even a vote or not, to me, it speaks about the communication breakdown that's at Penn State between her and her boss. That's information that she should definitely know about.
Yeah, and it's not Sandy Barber's fault. It's not Gene Smith's fault, who's the athletic director at Ohio State. There's a lot of deflecting going on right now, and I don't really know where the buck stops. Frankly, even if you look at the way Kevin Warren answered questions on the Big Ten Network just last week, he was somewhat uncertain as to why things went the way they went. We still haven't gotten answers, and I don't anticipate getting those answers anytime soon. But if I were a parent, I would do whatever it takes to find out exactly what went on behind closed doors. How did they arrive at this decision without ever talking to our kids or without ever talking to us as well? So I would definitely do the exact same thing, but all the deflection makes me feel like they're trying to kind of cover things up a little bit. And that to me is extremely unsettling, knowing how many players' careers are going to be affected negatively by the decision that these administrators made.
Greg, I'm going to push back on you a little bit because you mentioned that it's not the athletic director's fault, but is it not an athletic director's job to either know if a vote's happening? If a vote happens and they have no idea that it did happen, do they not text or call the people that they work for? And furthermore, when you stand in front of a microphone and you tell the world that you're unaware, you're admitting to the world you have a communication issue within your own halls. How is that not at the feet of an athletic director?
Unless they're in the room where it happens, it's difficult for them to have any say in the decision. And I think that's part of the challenge here. We've heard all types of different speculation as to whether there was a vote, whether there wasn't a vote, whether it was 12-2, whether it was 8-6. We don't know anything. And they're all supposed to put forth a united front when they might not all agree. And that's a really challenging thing, I think, for leadership to try to all be in the same boat together and yet completely disagree with some of the other constituents within the conference itself. So it's a challenging spot to be in, but I think the presidents ultimately are the ones that made this decision, and clearly it was a very divisive and polarizing topic amongst the group.
It is strange to me that the next question should have been, well, did you call your president or did you ask your boss? Like, it's not just at Penn State, though. We have seen all along in this whole decision-making process in the Big Ten, it appears that at every school, the athletic directors are making one statement, the coaches are coming out making a different statement, as if nobody has talked to one another. And I think the next question should be, did you call them And did you ask them? And so I don't understand this thing that is happening now where people are making statements publicly saying that they don't know. That makes no sense to me, because go find out. And then if you can't find out, then there is the problem. And what we're seeing is the fact that you can't call your president and find out, or you can't call the coach and find out what's going on. But not only is the conference, all the schools not on the same page, we're seeing that schools, the president, the athletic director, and the coach can't even get on the same page. And that's why I believe that when we talk about having unity and one person lead or one committee lead the entire NCAA or the Power Five conferences, how in the world do you get that done when you can't even get it done at your own school?
Yeah, no, you're right, Joey. That's a great point. And you know, to circle back about Penn State's athletic director, that would have been my follow-up question. Like, you don't know if there was a vote. Well, did you ask your president? And what type of communication do you guys have? Because that's something that it's the most important decision. Guys, this is the most important decision of all of their careers, you know? So at that point, how could you not know if there was a vote? If there was a vote, what was the result of that vote? So you can go on and give that information to the people who need it. So that was very, it's almost like she threw her president up under the bus with that statement.
But answer me this, Dez and Joey, and Fitz even, if y'all have an opinion, because I feel like right now the Big Ten, when they got out in front of it and canceled their season last Tuesday, they thought that would apply so much pressure to the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12 that they would follow suit. Well, now that those three leagues are proceeding towards trying to open the season at some point in September, now all the pressure has been reverted back to the Big Ten and the Pac-12, because if for whatever reason those three conferences play, that's going to look really, really bad on the decision makers in the Big Ten and the Pac-12. Doesn't mean their decision's wrong. It's just going to apply pressure on the recruiting trail and just how it's going to be used against them in the years to come. Plus, they're going to have a lot of fans that they're going to have to explain to as to why they came to their eventual conclusion.
Yeah, Greg, I'm confident in saying that I believe that Kevin Warren and the Big Ten, that they didn't come to this conclusion or this decision with any other conference in mind. Don't forget, now, back on July 9th, they're the conference that went out there and said, hey, we're going to go with a schedule that's only involving our schools, our conference, a conference-only schedule. Don't forget, and they did that without anybody else's knowledge. No other conference knew they were going to do that. And then at that same time, Greg, Kevin Warren made the statement that, and we're prepared not to play the season two if the medical advice that we get from our experts deem that we can't play it. So I think that they made this decision like we've seen other conferences make their decision during this pandemic, all about their conference and in their best interest, not worried about how is this going to put pressure on the SEC, the ACC, or any other conference in the Power Five.
And I agree with you, Dez. I don't believe it has anything to do with putting pressure on anybody else or believing that anybody else was going to follow. I think that these are educated people. And I believe they got in a room and they listened to the experts, the medical experts that gave them advice. They took that advice and they made a decision. Now, to me, the more pressure is on the other conferences that are saying they are going to play, because now we've had this period of time where the Pac-12 and the Big Ten has been shut down. So we've had this period of time that everyone is looking at the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12 across the country believing they're going to give us football because they figured something out, something that the rest of those conferences just couldn't figure out. So now if it doesn't happen, there's more pressure put on that situation than the Big Ten, the Pac-12, standing up for themselves and saying, from what we know of this virus up till now, we do not believe it is safe for our student athletes to play football. I believe it's a sound decision, a well thought out decision, and they'll stand by it regardless of what the other conferences do.
But I think what they didn't anticipate to that point, Joey, is that parents and players were going to ask them to show their cards. And that's what they don't seem to be prepared to do, but they're going to have to do at some point, because I don't think players or families are going to let this go until they get more information. So we'll see how it continues to unfold. But coming up next, Nick Saban didn't hold back when he was asked about spring football. You'll hear what he had to say. And we're going to talk to another coach, North Carolina. Absolutely crushing it. We'll talk to Mack Brown coming up in the show also. Alabama practices are underway, and despite what the guys say, I'm going to get excited about that, because the best part is, even if we don't get football, we know we at least get to hear Coach Saban speak. This is what he had to say about spring football possibilities when he was on Get Up this morning.
I think one of the real consequences of this is, you know, if you're a junior or senior and you have an NFL grade, are you going to play in the spring, or is that going to become sort of a JV season with a lot of these juniors and seniors opting out and not playing their senior year?
Yes, anytime you hear the words JV coming out of Nick Saban's mouth, what reaction does it give you as a former player?
Jason, listen, anytime you hear JV come out of anybody's mouth in this context, it's like a backhanded smack to the face. It's one of the most derogatory statements that you could use. Now, listen, guys, we understood if there will be a spring season. If spring season happens, right, we're going to miss out on some of the stars. We knew this going into it, right? You know, like, you got the Justin Fields wouldn't play probably, Trevor Lawrence, you know, your superstars, they wouldn't play. But to call it a JV season is like a slap in the face to the idea, to the attempt of even having the spring football season. You got guys who are backup quarterbacks. Don't forget, now this comes from a coach who played a backup quarterback, a true freshman, in the biggest game of the season, the national championship game. Don't forget, guys, Tua was a true freshman, came in there in the game against Georgia, the national championship game. That didn't make that a JV game, did it? No, Greg. It actually won them a national championship. So don't be so disrespectful to the backups and start calling them a JV team and we'll have a JV season. That was disrespectful.
Yeah, and I think he does realize that a lot of his stars are not going to play, but his JV is a lot better than a lot of other teams' JV. So in the event we do have a JV season, I expect Alabama to be pretty good in that JV season, and he's going to go out and try to win every single game like he always does. I think everyone's going to play under the same circumstances. The stars are not going to play because they're going to be thinking NFL, and then whatever's left on that roster, and this is why it plays into the hands of the Clemsons and Alabamas and teams like Ohio State that have great depth, and they have five-star kids waiting in their second-place spots to move into stars. It'll play into their hands because they're deep enough to handle that so-called JV season and still be pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if I want to make an assumption here, but unlike my two buddies, Dez and Joey, I actually played JV as a sophomore in high school. Y'all never saw JV, so y'all can't speak to how difficult it really is. JV was challenging for me, at least, as a 16-year-old sophomore. Look, I actually understand his intent here. I get why he said what he said. He doesn't want to see a season watered down. I completely understand that, too. And you don't go to the Big Ten or the SEC to play against average players. You want to play against the best. Is playing Ohio State without Justin Fields the same experience? Probably not. So I understand his intent, but yeah, saying JV is a little bit harsh. I completely understand where you guys are coming from.
I mean, let's be real though. Let me be the voice of the fan for a second. If you're a fan and you're watching college football in the spring, do you really care if it's – as long as all of the big NFL prospects are gone, you just want to see Ohio State beat Michigan, right? Like, it doesn't really – Greg, it doesn't really matter one way or the other, does it?
Not necessarily. I mean, if you think about it, it's really about the school. I mean, you still are going to love your school, whether just – for instance, you're going to love Ohio State, Joey, whether Justin Fields is taking snaps or not. I'm going to love Alabama. Dez is going to love Michigan, regardless of who's under center or who's at wide receiver or whatever first-round pick's unavailable. So, yeah, there will still be support for the school and for the spring season, but all in all, it won't necessarily feel the same if some of the biggest stars aren't there or available for the season.
Yeah, some of these schools are getting 80,000 people in their stands for spring games. And that's just going against one another to see who the next Greg McElroy is or who the next Desmond Howard is going to be on the team. So I'd imagine that there would absolutely be a lot of excitement, but there'd also be a tear in their eye realizing that they didn't get to see maybe a Justin Fields or a Trevor Lawrence play in their last season, but they'd still be excited.
Yeah, and all I know is that the fans are going to trash talk a conference championship however they get it. As long as their JV is better than the other JV, fans are going to be happy. Fans are always happy in North Carolina right now. That program has turned around. They had students in. Students have been sent home, but they're still going to play football. We'll talk to head coach Mack Brown next about the decision and what's next for them as a program. North Carolina students were on campus gearing up for a great year in Chapel Hill. Unfortunately, due to COVID-19 outbreaks, they've now been sent home. The school will move forward with virtual classes only. That being said, football will still be played. So to get the latest and greatest on it, we're joined now by University of North Carolina football head coach Mack Brown. Coach, I really appreciate your time. As we just noted, with a few rare exceptions, students are now going to be taking virtual classes only. Obviously, football will still be played. How involved in the conversation have you been about football within these times?
Jason, I've talked to our athletics director a lot and our chancellor some, and basically what I've said and my narrative's been, I want it safe. And if it's safe for the guys and the coaches and the staff and the people that are going to be in the stadium when we play, I'm all in. If it's not safe at any point, then we're out and let's not play. And so far, our guys have been incredible. They're having a great time. They're enjoying themselves. We had our best practice this morning. So I'm all in. I feel really good about the direction that we're going. I like the fact that the presidents and chancellors in the ACC said, let's move forward. Let's see if this thing can work. And if not, we will stop. But right now, we're working toward opening up with Syracuse on September 12th.
Well, Coach, we've seen the pictures online of you guys with your six-foot distancing sticks. What sort of measures are you taking to keep everybody safe as you practice?
Jason, the medical staff's done an amazing job where they have their own water bottles or Gatorade bottles. They've got their name on it. They get sanitized before they touch their bottle only. They've got shields that they wear up and down. You see here the six-foot pole that we constantly, every coach has one. And we're moving up to show them to make sure that they properly social distance. And we've got something on our Jumbotron at practice that says, spread out, guys, spread out. We got a little music video that we talked to them about. So you've got to coach COVID now. It's not just discipline of your team, but you've got to coach staying away from each other, wearing your mask, wearing your double shield on your helmet, what you do away from the building. We're eating differently. We're meeting differently. It's just a different time, Jason. But for all of us, right now, this is our new normal. And I really believe that our staff and our team's getting more used to this every day.
Well, let's be honest, Coach. You have a real mindset to the entire college football community. We've seen a couple of conferences decide that it's not safe to play. Why are you guys comfortable in this space where other conferences haven't been?
Well, we're comfortable simply because our medical experts have told us that it's safe at this point. And that's who we believe, Jason. I make none of these decisions. I'm simply told what to do, and when we do it, we move forward. And again, our narrative has been, if it's safe, the kids want to play. And I think it's very important for fans to understand every player has been told, if you don't feel like practicing, don't practice. If you don't feel like playing, don't play. You can opt out, wait till January to come back. You get to keep your scholarship, but there is absolutely no pressure for you to play because these are different times, and different times call for different measures. And everybody handles these things differently. And one thing that we're really talking to our guys about and really concerned about is their mental health, not just their physical health. So we want to make sure they don't have depression, they don't have anxiety. All of those things are at a higher level right now in people across the country than they've been in the past.
Well, Coach, with that being said, you talked about the players, but coaches are also in some level of risk. So for you personally, how much did you factor your own risk into the determination to coach this fall?
Well, Jason, I'm in that experience group that they talk about that should be nervous about this. I'm not nervous at all. I'm doing what I'm told to do. I wear a mask. I social distance. I wash my hands 84 times a day. I sing our fight song every time I wash my hands, and I've got it down really well right now. But I was hired to lead this program, and leaders have to step up during dire times, and you take crisis and turn them into positives. So I'm responsible to the University of North Carolina, to Chancellor Cunningham, to Chancellor Gustavich, Bubba Cunningham, our athletics director, our trustees, our board of governors, all of these kids and their parents and their staff. So what an awful thing for me to even think about stepping out at a time where they need leadership and they need a single voice. And I've told them, you win the day. You worry about what happens in your life emotionally, mentally, physically, at school and on the football field. Let me worry about all the other stuff, and I'll handle that for you and bring you the information that you need.
One of the key words you just used there was leadership. You are leading this program. And let's get to a little of the football, because you've led them to incredible recruiting results that we're not used to seeing from North Carolina particularly. What's been the key to your recruiting success?
Jason, we've got a good product. Number one, you have to have that before it works. Number two, I hired a really perfect staff, I think, for this place. They love the place. That they have roots here. They've recruited this state for many years. I said, don't hire a guy that doesn't know his way to Charlotte if you're going to be at the University of North Carolina. It helped that Sally and I were familiar with this place, because a lot of the things are still here that were here 20-something years ago, and we've been able to move forward. And we love the high school football players in this footprint. And we actually recruit from D.C. to Atlanta. And I think everybody knows we're about to be good. So it's a fun time for us. We're taking all this mess and trying to be safe, but move it forward so we can have a lot of fun with the kids.
Well, a lot of people think you're about to be really good, Coach. And Sam Howell, your sophomore quarterback, is a big part of why. So I know it's been a strange offseason, but what have you seen in growth from him, particularly at the quarterback position, that has you excited for this season?
When the pandemic hit and everybody went home at spring break, guys had an opportunity to either work or not work. And Sam's a worker. He has no hobbies. It's all football and school and his faith. And he went home, he went back to Charlotte, and he worked every day. And I can't see any difference, Jason, in him now than this time last year. He's stronger, he's more experienced, but he's still got the same work ethic he had. And some guys can use this time as an excuse and step back a little bit, not work as hard, and lose who they are. I think Sam's taken just the opposite approach, and he's really moving forward, and I'm really proud of him. Can't wait to watch him play.
You're singing fight songs. You're dancing around. I'm jealous we didn't get some of this at ESPN, Coach. We really appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Best of luck this season. Stay healthy first and foremost, but best of luck this season, my friend. We appreciate you.
Thank you, Jason. All my friends at ESPN, please stay safe and healthy as well.
Things are obviously going well for Coach Brown. Not so much for Mike Norvell, one of the biggest names hired this offseason, but already seems like he's got two strikes against him at Florida State. How do they right the ship? We'll figure it out next. Saturday, it's another UFC fight night from Vegas, and this one finally going down. Pedro Munhoz takes on former lightweight champ Frankie Edgar in the bantamweight main event. The main card starts at 8:30 Eastern, 5:30 Pacific on ESPN, with the prelims at 5:30 Eastern on ESPN Plus. To get ESPN Plus, all you have to do is go to ESPN.com, ESPNplus.com, or download the ESPN app. Last Thursday, players spoke out at Florida State regarding the lack of transparency with testing protocols. New head coach Mike Norvell has since spoken to players to clarify the issue, including wide receiver Warren Thompson, who initiated this story on social media. Let's remember, this isn't the first Norvell time that he and his players aren't seeing eye to eye when it comes to communication. So, how do you right the ship if things are going wrong when you haven't even played a game yet? We'll get into that now. Joey Galloway, what does Mike Norvell need to do to make everything right in that locker room?
Man, that is tough. If you're a player at Florida State, you've gone through the Willie Taggart experiment that lasted for two seasons. You've heard different reasons on why he's no longer there. And then Mike Norvell starts off like this. As an athlete, as a football player, you sit in a locker room and you get a new head coach. And you want to trust this guy. You don't know much about him. You got a new leader. And all of us have sat in those meeting rooms and looked at our head coach and just didn't know what to expect. And because this has gotten off to such a rocky start, and then you go into hopefully playing a season, I think the only thing that cures any issue in any sport is winning. And so if they do play, it is going to be extremely important for these Florida State players to find success on the field and what Norvell teaches them to do and his game plans and things like that. Because if they don't, it is so hard to get a locker room back if you as a team don't find success on the field.
Yeah, Joey, I tell you what, man, he couldn't have gotten off to a worse start. Normally we talk about coaches getting off to bad starts. We're talking about maybe a 0-3 or 0-4 start, not a coach that hasn't even coached a game yet, but has lost the locker room twice. I mean, that's unimaginable. So I think that in order to try to get the locker room back, he's going to have to try to reel in some of the leaders, a guy like Marvin Wilson, some of the leaders on the team, get a leadership council and speak to those guys and make sure you keep your finger on the pulse of the locker room, the things that they're feeling, the things that they're thinking. Don't forget, these are unprecedented times. We already heard Mac Brown talk about, don't just worry about the physical health of your football players, worry about the mental health of your players too, about depression, anxiety. So at this point, what he can do is he can endear himself to his team by having some sort of leadership council, meeting with them weekly, and then making sure that he's addressing any issues that they're dealing with presently. I think that's the best way he can try to win that locker room right now. But he got off to just a terrible start, Greg.
Yeah, and it takes time, Dez. I mean, these guys are not going to be won over immediately. Kind of like what you guys talked about, I mean, it's a trust factor. And frankly, that trust is going to be built over the course of time or throughout the course of a season. Because if they look to Mike Norvell and they say, hey, man, this guy knows what he's doing on the football field, that will help create more trust between the players and the coach as well. So they just need time, man. And like you said, it has certainly been a bumpy few months in his tenure, and he needs to get things ironed out as quickly as humanly possible with the leaders within the locker room.
Well, he's not the only new coach that has a bumpy road to begin with. The rest, though, should be on the field, as the SEC obviously has four new coaches, and the scheduling gods didn't do them any favors coming out. When you look at some of the battles, the question is, Greg McElroy, which new coach, when you look at this list, do you think is under the most pressure to start strong in the SEC?
Oh, man, Sam Pittman. There are good people in Arkansas. Sam Pittman's an amazing man. He didn't deserve this. He didn't deserve this. Not only does he pick up Georgia in his first game as a head coach, they also pick up the Florida Gators in their cross-division rivalry now. So Sam Pittman, not only has he inherited a very difficult circumstance where they don't have a ridiculous amount of talent, they're trying to change their identity, and he's a first-time head coach, all those things are challenging. Then you pick up some of the opponents they're having to play in the SEC West and the two best teams in the SEC East. Man, it's going to be a tough year for Arkansas and Sam Pittman trying to earn the respect and trying to get that program going in the right direction.
I never think that a first-year coach is under much pressure, because the reason they're there is the team wasn't very good and the last coach is gone. And so when you look at these guys, I think Mike Leach is sitting in a position to go on the road and play an LSU team that Dez already told us is going to be terrible. And so if he can go on the road and get this one under his belt, because think about it, I mean, the things are working in his favor. He won't be dealing with the normal LSU crowd that is like this crazy crowd to play in front of. He gets a chance to go on the road and play against an LSU team that has lost basically everything. They're trying to reload. And then he gets Arkansas next and then Kentucky. So Mike Leach is set up to, number one, knock off one of the big dogs while they're a little dog, and then get a couple more wins. Hey, he is set up schedule-wise to have some success.
Okay, Joey. I didn't say they were going to be terrible, but okay, I feel you. They're probably going to be pretty bad. But anyway, listen, how about Lane Kiffin? I just think the Lane Kiffin brand, it just brings so much swagger, so much confidence. When you hear Lane Kiffin is taking over a program, you just expect something exciting. You expect wins. You expect a high-flying offense is going to score a bunch of points and put a lot of yards on their opponents. So I think Lane Kiffin taking over a team that only had four wins a year ago. But when you look at him, he's coached in the SEC before, obviously. He was Joe Brady before Joe Brady. Don't forget, guys, he was that young hotshot offensive guru, had a brilliant offensive mind. People thought he would skyrocket to the top. And he has had numerous head coaching jobs, and now he's back in the SEC. I think that it's going to be some pressure on Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss.
Now, as long as Leach and Kiffin deliver at the postgame press conference, we're all going to be happy. So, McElroy, I'll ask you, who do you think has the biggest gripe with this SEC schedule?
Man, I obviously Arkansas, I alluded to that, but I thought Auburn and Texas A&M, for that matter, they walked into some pretty tough situations. When you look at LSU, I thought had a relatively favorable. I thought Alabama had a favorable situation, and Georgia and Florida. But I thought A&M, given what they had in their schedule leading up to this point, now they get these two new additional opponents. I thought their schedule improved as far as challenges exponentially. I thought Auburn, similar circumstances, to play the Iron Bowl and then to play A&M the week after the Iron Bowl, man, just really, really tough for those two teams in the SEC West.
Greg, does it say anything to you that the Iron Bowl is so late in the season?
I love that it's still on Thanksgiving. I mean, knowing that there's going to be people breaking bread that week, people traveling, watching the game together, and those houses might be divided. I love that the SEC protected the integrity of the holiday week by making sure the rivalry games were played that week. But, yeah, of course, Jason, to answer your question, I'm feeling like the SEC might be optimistic about getting all their games played. Like, if I'm going to read between the lines, it has to be it, right?
Well, if there's anything I can figure out over the course of the day is that LSU may or may not be good, and we may or may not get football. I can't figure any of these things out. I do know that we'll be watching all of it. All right, Sunday, don't forget, we kick off our fifth annual Fantasy Football Marathon with more than 24 straight hours of coverage on ESPN, ESPN2, and the ESPN app. All the fantasy insight you need to get ready for your season. That's coming up Sunday. You don't want to miss it. Okay, so NBA fans were up in arms last night. Kristaps Porzingis, Marcus Morris had a little bit of a moment here. It resulted in some double technicals, but because he already had a tech in the game, Porzingis gets ejected. I mean, you take a look at this, gentlemen. What's worse, this ejection or targeting ejections in college football? Look at players going off on this thing. I can't figure out which one's worse. McElroy, what do you got?
That is a terrible call.
That's a targeting. Oh, go ahead. Yeah, that awful call. That's the refs making it about them. Come on. Let the players decide the game.
I'm a Dallas Mavericks guy from Dallas, so this one cuts real close to home. But still, targeting ejections is worse than that. I mean, legit, targeting ejections are the worst. Because I've seen so many guys tossed for no reason whatsoever.
Look, I'm just saying, don't break the rules, guys.
I agree.
Just stop breaking the rules. Like, if everybody could just play nice when they play these games, we wouldn't have these problems. That's all I'm saying. Coming from the obvious non-athlete that's on this panel. Gentlemen, as always, wonderful working with you. Glad that we could actually talk about football. I'm going to stay optimistic. Keep watching ESPN all day. Thanks for hanging out with us.